Welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Sunday, July 25th, 2021. I'm your reader, Sharon Falduto, reading to you from Coralville. It has been suggested that perhaps I need to slow down in my reading, so I'll give it a try. From the front page of today's Gazette, expanded child tax credit, a relief for Iowa families. About 669,000 children statewide to benefit from program, by Michaela Ram of the Gazette. It's been a tough year for Tanya Street. As a self-employed Cedar Rapids resident who teaches ice skating, the 45-year-old was unable to work as the novel coronavirus shut down business throughout most of 2020. And then the derecho hit in August, severely damaging the I'm on Ice arena and further hindering Street's means to earn an income. Each week, she wondered whether she would be able to pay her bills and provide for her 17-year-old daughter, Carly Burgess. I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. Sometimes I just don't know if I'm going to be able to make a payment or not, she said. But Street, along with millions of other families across the nation, have found some relief from new advanced child tax credit payments that went into effect this month. I'm still dealing with financial ramifications from everything that happened last year. When I heard about the child tax credit, I was relieved because things are very tight, Street said. The $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, passed by Congress in March, includes a $100 billion temporary expansion of the child tax credit program that will benefit more than 36 million families, representing about 60 million children across the United States. Starting in July, half the annual credit will be distributed in advance on a monthly basis until December. The other half will be available after filing 2022 taxes. Under the new program, families can receive $3,000 per child ages 6 to 17, or about $250 per month per child. Families will receive $3,600 per child under the age of 6, or $300 per month per child. If a child turns 18 in 2021, he or she is not eligible to receive monthly payments. The credit is available to single parents making up to $75,000 a year, single head of household filers making up to $112,500 a year, and couples filing jointly making up to $150,000 a year. Monthly checks from the Internal Revenue Service began arriving July 15th. The expanded child tax credit will benefit about 669,000 children in Iowa, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute. That means 93% of children under the age of 18 in the state could benefit from this expansion. Of those children, the majority, 78%, are white. 10% are Latino, 4% are Black, 2% are Asian, and 5% identify as other or multiple races, the analysis concluded. The expansion also means an additional 27 million children will receive the tax credit. Families who didn't earn enough money and didn't owe income taxes previously could not receive the full tax credit. In Iowa, 198,000 children who weren't eligible under the previous credit program now can receive these monthly payments. This move could be transformative for some families nationwide, particularly some of the poorest Americans. The program is expected to cut child poverty in the United States in half, according to an analysis from the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at Columbia University. Iowa could see nearly a 40% drop in child poverty, the center said. In 2019, about 7% of Iowa families lived below the poverty line, which is currently $26,500 for a family of four. But experts warn this advanced tax credit is just that and does not operate the same way as a stimulus payment. The monthly payments are families' estimated child tax credits for 2021 and are based on 2020 or 2019 income and household sizes. So if their income or household size changes, families could end up receiving smaller refunds than expected or owe on their taxes next spring. People may have to pay back a portion of their taxes. It could be a problem for people around that $150,000 or $75,000 range, said Noah Schmall, a lawyer at Lynch Dallas Law Firm in Cedar Rapids. Eligible families can opt out of the monthly payments and instead receive them as a lump sum with their 2022 taxes instead. When Street's first check from the IRS arrived, she planned to fill up her car with gas so she could continue commuting to Coralville to teach ice skating lessons at the ice rink in Coral Ridge Mall. Her business has picked up in recent weeks as the COVID-19 vaccines have become more widely available, but Street said her income still is falling below her typical rate before the pandemic. Because of that, she expects her child tax credit will go toward bills. But she's hopeful this will help her to do more than just scrape by. Maybe she'll even be able to take her daughter out to eat for the first time in several months, she said. Although it's not 100% peace of mind, just having that little extra each month is going to give me a little more flexibility, and that's huge, Street said. So far, she has been able to get by with the help of food and rental assistance. Stimulus checks went directly to pay for bills, she said. The last year has been tough, and I've had to deal with the majority of it on my own, Street said. Staying afloat has been a huge stress. I'm just grateful Congress passed something for us to help us get by. Also from the front page of today's Gazette, in reversal, COVID-19 cases in Iowa now increasing. Officials urge, get vaccinated as large gatherings loom. By Aaron Murphy, the Gazette Lead Des Moines Bureau. After more than a half year of decline, the number of COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations in Iowa has been increasing in recent weeks, despite widespread availability of a vaccine. With large public gatherings, including the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, the Quad City Times Bix 7 Road Race, and the Iowa State Fair looming, and another school year set to start in roughly a month, public health officials are expressing concern. And their message echoes in unison. If you have not already, get the COVID-19 vaccine. Nearly all new hospitalizations from COVID-19, more than 97% nationwide, are of unvaccinated individuals, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, recently characterized the state of a COVID-19 in the nation as a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We clearly know that the public health trend in COVID-19 cases in Iowa and in Polk County is definitely because of individuals who are not vaccinated, said Polk County Public Health Spokeswoman Nola Agner-Davis. We can't stress enough about getting vaccinated. We know the vaccine is effective. We know it works. After a deadly winter, the number of new COVID-19 cases in Iowa started falling around late November and early December, roughly the same time the vaccine was first made available. Over the next 7 months, the number of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths all dropped dramatically and continuously. But over the past 3+ weeks, and for the first time since that devastating winter surge, the numbers of new cases and hospitalizations in Iowa have been increasing. The rolling 2-week average of daily new cases bottomed out at 80.7 on June 27th. Since then, that figure has steadily increased and more than doubled to 173.6 as of last Tuesday, according to state public health data. That is the last date for which state public health data is publicly available because the state has reduced its COVID-19 data reporting. Throughout much of the pandemic, the state updated pandemic data multiple times per day on its coronavirus.iowa.gov website. Recently, the state changed to updating the figures just once a week. Also, over the past 2 weeks, COVID-19 hospitalizations in Iowa have jumped from 71 to more than 100, the most in 2 months. Public health officials hammered on the need to get more Iowans vaccinated in order to stop the virus's spread. The emergence of the COVID-19 Delta variant has added to public health officials' consternation. The new variant appears to be even more transmissible than the original virus and appears to be having a greater impact on young people, health and medical officials say. With the rise in prevalence of the Delta variant, we are urging all Iowans to get vaccinated for COVID-19 as soon as possible, Ekstrand said. Since the beginning of the vaccine campaign, our goal has always been to get as many Iowans vaccinated as quickly as possible. Vaccines continue to be a critical tool for preventing the spread of this virus and keeping all Iowans safe and healthy. We will continue to message about the importance of getting vaccinated for COVID-19 for the foreseeable future. According to a new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, 80% of Americans who are not yet vaccinated said they either probably will not or definitely will not get the shots. Only 19% of the unvaccinated said they probably or definitely will get the vaccine, the Associated Press reported. This isn't something to wait on. We know what protects you is getting vaccinated, Davis said. We know over the course of time that the variant is changing. Right now, the Delta variant is more transmissible. We don't know what the future of this virus looks like. The most absolutely important way to get protected right now is to get vaccinated. Turning to the Iowa Today section, fundraising comes back as honor flights set to resume, by Caleb McCullough of the Gazette. as the Eastern Iowa Honor Flight nonprofit prepares to resume flying veterans to the nation's capital for a day this fall, fundraisers for the organization also have been ramping up, including an honor float earlier this month down the Wapsipinicon River. The local organization, along with the National Honor Flight Network, paused flights in 2020 as the COVID-19 pandemic made travel more dangerous, especially for older adults, which includes most veterans who go on the flights to Washington, D.C. The National Network announced in June it would resume flying again starting August 16th. The Cedar Rapids branch has three flights planned for fall, September 21st, October 5th, and October 19th. The group usually does two flights in the spring and two in the fall, but Vice President Jason Brandon said it's doing three this fall to make up for the lost time. It's probably one of the most rewarding things I've ever been a part of, and to be able to get our flights going again and be able to experience that day of pure joy and appreciation for those veterans, that's why we do this, Brandon said. The Eastern Iowa Honor Flight is a nonprofit that charters flights to Washington for veterans, bringing them to various landmarks and war memorials. As the organization prepares to host the flights, it's sifting through applications and checking off names on its list of more than 1,000 veterans waiting to make the trip. The program is open to veterans of World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War, as well as any veteran with a terminal illness. Even as it's resuming flights, the Honor Flight organization is implementing precautions to avoid the spread of COVID-19. Like on most public transportation, masks are required on the flights and in buses, as well as anywhere indoors where social distancing isn't possible. The organization also is requiring veterans who go on the flight to be vaccinated. That's a national guideline and was decided in the interest of safety. The safety of all veterans and all people going on the flight is the utmost importance, so that's what we have to go by, Bell said. Each flight cost about $85,000, Brandon said. The organization has money on hand to fund the flights, but Brandon said organizers are always happy to get donations. On July 17th, over 250 people with kayaks and canoes floated to the Wakipakata Natural Area in Central City for an honor float, which raised about $6,500 for the flights. The group floated from Central City to Wabik. Many attendees sported military apparel. Some were veterans, others family of veterans, and others were outdoor enthusiasts who came to support the cause. Registration was $25, and the kayakers received a swag bag, drink tokens, and lunch on a sandbar during the float. All the money raised went to the honor flight. The fundraiser was the third annual honor float, and the crowd was much larger than in years past, the float's organizer, Deb Holton, said. This is like five times as big as our first year, Holton said. Our first year was like 70 people. Hope Long, who went on the float, said her grandfather, an Army veteran, went on the flight in recent years and said it was the best experience of his life. When he landed, we were at the airport to meet him, and he was a bawling mess, she said. Him and his brother were both in the service, and so they went together on the honor flight. When veterans return on the flight, a ceremony is held to welcome them home, in which dozens and sometimes hundreds of people come to the airport to honor the veterans. Long said that was an emotional experience to honor veterans in that way. I think that every veteran should be able to do that and not have to worry and be honored, she said. And the story is accompanied by a photo of several people floating along the Wapsipinicon River in individual kayaks. They all look very relaxed, and also a picture of several people, including a little girl in a red gingham dress, holding up signs, "We love our vets, team vets," and Tenley McGuire, then two of Kyoto, holds up a sign, "The homecoming of an honor flight at the Eastern Iowa Airport on April 17th, 2018. And the Week in Iowa section, which is a recap of news from across the state. In the news, Finkenauer launches a Senate campaign. Former U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer launched her Democratic campaign in Iowa's U.S. Senate race. Nearly 7 months out of office, Finkenauer said she still sees a lot to fight for. Continuing a theme from her Iowa legislative and congressional campaigns, Finkenauer's Senate campaign focuses on working families who are oftentimes not heard in Washington. Longtime Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley has not yet said whether he'll seek an eighth term. Finkenauer is the third Democrat to join the race, with former county supervisor Dale Mulbauer and Glenn Hurst of Minden. Claims denied. Two childhood friends named by defense lawyers as alternate suspects in the killing of University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts said they had nothing to do with the crime. Lawyers for Christian Bahena Rivera, the man convicted of killing Tibbetts, named Gavin Jones and Dalton Hansen. Unsafe ride. A woman whose family went on an Iowa amusement ride shortly before an accident that killed an 11-year-old boy and critically injured his brother said her boat also had problems floating properly and felt unsafe. Culver nominated. President Joe Biden nominated former Iowa Governor Chet Culver to the board of a federal organization that works to ensure rural areas have access to credit. If confirmed by the Senate, it would be Culver's second time serving on the board. Some quotes. That was my decision to start. Now this is a group decision. Davenport Mayor Mike Mattson on the decision by a city task force on gun violence to meet privately. And I really hate this America that we're giving my new granddaughter. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, a potential 2024 presidential candidate at an event in Iowa. Some odds and ends. Infrastructure funding. Members of Iowa's congressional delegation are optimistic upgrades to Mississippi River locks and dams will be included in a proposed $1.2 trillion infrastructure funding package. Anniversary displays. To commemorate Iowa's 175th anniversary, the State Historical Society is creating 300 temporary pop-up displays and 15 permanent cast aluminum historical markers. Both are available by online application. Explosion cause. A January home explosion in southeast Iowa that killed one person and injured another was caused when vapor from a gas leak was ignited when someone in the home lit a cigarette, officials reported. Water cooler. Fundraiser headliners. National GOP Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel and 2016 Iowa caucuses winner Texas U.S. Senator Ted Cruz will appear at Iowa 1st District U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson's Barbecue Bash fundraiser August 28th in Central City. Slater Field. The University of Iowa plans to name the field at Kinnick Stadium for Duke Slater, a trailblazing black player who was an All-American tackle a century ago, the Associated Press reported. And Water Plan, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, is accepting public comments to be included in the upcoming Cedar River Water Trail Plan. More in the news. Diversity Plan ban making impact. A new state law that bars schools from denying students from enrolling in other public districts to maintain demographic diversity is already having a significant impact on some Iowa districts with large minority populations. Almost 140 students, almost double what the state's legislative analysis agency projected, have requested to open enroll out of the Waterloo Community School District, school officials said. In Davenport, more than 100 students have applied for open enrollment, but all but 9 under the new law, school officials said. Crash victims. The two victims of a plane crash in Muscatine County were identified as Daniel and Sharon Slack of El Dorado Springs, Missouri. They were the only two aboard a 1972 Piper PA-28-150 that crashed just north of Muscatine. Daniel Slack was 68, Sharon Slack was 69. Foreclosure worries. As the federal moratorium on housing foreclosures nears its end, lenders and financial counselors do not foresee a tsunami of foreclosures in Iowa. In fact, some say their worst fears about the coronavirus's pandemic impact on mortgage delinquencies and potential foreclosures have not been realized. And 26 tornadoes. Preliminary data shows 26 tornadoes tore across Iowa on July 16th, according to the National Weather Service. If that number holds true, it would be the third most tornadoes in a single day to hit the state since 1980. Turning to the Insight page, we have a guest column from Eric Gutschmidt. Eric Gutschmidt is owner of Gutschmidt Properties in Cedar Rapids, and he writes, "Less shade, more heat. Am I the only one who noticed that it's been hotter than usual this year? When I wake up in the morning, I check the forecast, and it usually says somewhere in the 80s, but then by midday, it is already in the 90s. The forecast is based on historical weather data from back when we had trees, and well, that ain't it right now. As a landlord, we are having problems with houses that can't keep themselves cool with the AC running nonstop. It's not just the increased temperature making the AC struggle. Many of my houses are shaded by nearby trees, but now they are in direct sunlight. Cedar Rapids lost over half of our trees last August. The increase in direct sun means my houses are hotter inside in addition to the exterior temperature. When I remodeled in the past, I sized out the HVAC systems with historical averages in mind and didn't always insulate as well as I could have. This problem isn't unique to me, and it's not unique to landlords. The entire city is experiencing the increased need for AC and will suffer from it for decades to come until the trees go back. So what can we do? Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of options, and the options we do have will not be easy. Unless Steve Shriver can invent some miracle grow for trees that makes them grow 40 feet tall in a year. We have a few choices. We can upgrade all of our furnaces and central air conditioners. We can mount solar on all of our roofs, or we can add more and better insulation to our houses. The rule of thumb here is that if it's easy, it ain't cheap, and if it's cheap, it ain't easy. Furnaces and ACs are sized to the home that you have, and as a general rule, they are sized with a 20-degree swing in mind. So if it is 90 degrees outside, then the AC should be able to cool to 70 degrees without a problem. And usually there are only a handful of days a year when it is above 90. Now we are going to have entire weeks and months in the 90s. That means interior temperatures in the mid to high 70s, even 80s, and that would be with the HVAC systems running nonstop. If the system you put in is too small, then it will run nonstop and be very expensive and not even keep up. But if you put too large of a system in, it also will have problems. It will not run long enough and will short cycle, which is bad for the system. Air conditioners do two things simultaneously. They cool and they dehumidify the air. It is important that both things happen. With an oversized system, the air gets cooled so fast, the system turns off, but the dehumidifying process takes longer, so the temperature rises back up quickly, and a cool but very humid house doesn't feel comfortable. This is bad for the system and uses considerably more energy. It also increases your energy bill and wear and tear on your AC system. It's important to be aware of this because it explains why everyone's systems are struggling right now. They are too small. They were sized based upon Cedar Rapids with trees, Cedar Rapids when temperatures weren't so hot. Now to have an appropriately sized system, you would need to buy a new furnace and central air. If you get a central air conditioner that is too big for your furnace, then it causes the coil to freeze up. We're talking $6,000 to $10,000 per house for upgraded larger systems. Theirs are still going to be more expensive on your monthly utility bill, so this is not a great solution. You can try solar, and that would help in two ways. It would lower the cost of your bills because it would be creating electricity, and it would absorb some of the sunlight that would otherwise be directly beating down on and warming your house. But solar is not cheap. A panel system is easily two or three times as expensive as a bigger furnace and central air, and that is only lowering your electric bill, not your usage, and it still won't be enough to make your air conditioner keep up on those really hot days. That brings us to insulation, the cheapest of the three options. Insulation can come in many forms, the cheapest and easiest of which is blown-in insulation, which in an unfinished attic, which is maybe $1,000 or $2,000. This will help your home stay cooler, thus lowering demand on your air conditioner and hopefully allowing it to keep up on those hot days. Attics aren't the only places that can have their insulation upgraded. There are also exterior walls, doors, windows, and basements. Insulation also usually stops or slows drafts coming into houses, a significant factor in how well a house regulates its temperatures. Unfortunately, windows and doors and wall insulation are all more invasive and difficult. You may have to drill a bunch of holes in your walls to blow in insulation, and then you have to patch all of those holes. Or you can remove your drywall and do spray foam. Just remember, if it's cheap, it ain't easy. In years past, Alliant had a rebate program that subsidized all of this insulation, and we should look for ways to bring it back. Homeowners should really consider adding insulation to their homes either with cash out of pocket or with a home equity line of credit. If it can save hundreds of dollars per month, then it will pay itself back faster than solar or new air conditioners. The city also can help out by not micromanaging people's homes. The city can create a standardized energy audit that the landlord or home seller would pay for, and this would empower the renter or buyer with the knowledge of a home's energy efficiency and consumption. Then the free market would do what the free market does, and consumers would gravitate to more energy-efficient living. To kick off such a program, the city could make it a requirement for rentals because the city has to grant rental status and landlord license. As I've mentioned before, rents in Cedar Rapids are predicted to increase over the coming years. This seems like a small ask in exchange for the increased profits landlords are set to make. And again, that was a guest column by Eric Gutschmidt, owner of Gutschmidt Properties in Cedar Rapids. And turning to the community letters today and also today's editorial cartoon from Joe Heller of Green Bay, he has illustrated what appears to be a space populated by thousands of billboards. The next step in space tourism, and two people in a tiny rocket ship say that didn't take long as they pass billboards with the legends Space Vegas, Visit Zero Gravity Wall Drug, Space Fudge, Sea Astro Paul Bunyan, Moon Base Gator Farm, Six Flags Over Earth, Disney Galactic, Blast Off to Dollywood in Low Orbit, See Biggest Ball of Cosmic Twine, Experience Niagara Floats, This Way to the Rocket and Roll Hall of Fame, Legoland in Orbit, and then a tiny little alien, another spaceship, says, Welcome to the Roswell UFO Station. The first letter is from Gordon Taylor of Anamosa. Needle phobia is real and concerning. I believe President Joe Biden has done a good job of dispersing the COVID-19 vaccines. However, I think he has overlooked what I believe is a major problem in convincing people to get the vaccine, namely needle phobia. Now, I am 80 years old and have had both of the Moderna vaccine, but I still cannot watch the TV ads and articles discussing the COVID pandemic with endless scenes of needles being jabbed into arms. I say this even though the two shots I have had were virtually painless. I'm trying to imagine how a young person between 12 and 17 might react to those same TV scenes showing a 2 to 3 inch needle being inserted into various arms. I doubt that they would think it is relatively painless. A much more reasonable and I think effective technique would be to just show the eyes of the shot recipient. I have on those occasions where the eyes are visible, notice they barely, if at all, flinch. I sincerely believe this would be a much more effective sales tool for those people who are vaccine adverse. Gordon Taylor of Anamosa. Next, Kelly Crandall of Cedar Rapids writes, Enough is enough with wokeness. With all the woke and the everyone who doesn't agree with you is out of touch language, let me give you a different point to consider. I am a white male born in Cedar Falls in 1956, paper route in snow and cold, Boy Scout, built farm fences for a contractor for $1 an hour, worked in an appliance store delivering and servicing appliances, $3 per hour, and have lived in Cedar Rapids since 1980. I worked very hard jobs, including warehouses, bus driver, and shredding documents. I never made more than $20 an hour, but raised 2 great kids and have paid off my home. I retired at 65. Do not call my Social Security an entitlement. I paid my dues, and my body is beat up because of it. When I see politicians and elected officials say I am the problem because I don't understand, I get really angry. There was a reason Donald Trump got elected. There will be a reason for a huge red wave in 2022. We are not right-wing radicals. We are Americans who are tired of your BS. Kelly Crandall of Cedar Rapids. Next, Jerry Chaffee of Cedar Rapids writes, A pleasant change from Todd Dorman's usual negative columns. It was very pleasant surprise to read a column in Sunday's paper, July 18th, by Todd Dorman, Big Bucks, Big Plans for Rescue Act Funds, in which he laid out a very positive analysis and well-laid-out recommendations on the subject, as opposed to his usual negative articles about Republicans, Donald Trump, Governor Kim Reynolds, and the Iowa legislature. Nice move, Todd. Now maybe in spite of your left-wing leanings, you can come around and be more neutral to appeal to more Iowans. Jerry Chaffee of Cedar Rapids. Next, Chandra Jordan of Marion writes, Thanks and an apology to streets workers. I would like to thank the city of Marion and the workers who worked so hard on my street recently, repaving and repairing it. It turned out wonderfully, and we are deeply appreciative of all your hard work. I would also like to apologize on behalf of my clearly disrespectful neighbors who were rude to your workers, who drove around the barriers or on sidewalks in order to park in their driveway. Those who drove on the still wet asphalt, leaving tire marks that will now be permanent, all because they are too lazy to park one block over and walk to their residence. I parked a block over and I walked to my house every night after work, even with a back that was spasming out. I just wanted the city of Marion and the road co-workers to know that not all of us are lazy, disrespectful, rude, and concerned with only our own convenience. Some of us do respect and appreciate the work you do, so thank you very much. Chandra Jordan of Marion. And finally, Marcelina Ceniceros of Iowa City writes, American families are finally catching a break. The new child tax credit monthly payments have started. Most families will now get an extra $250 to $300 from the IRS each month to help with rent, food, childcare, and medical costs. If you did not receive a payment, go to childtaxcredit.gov to see if you qualify. This new tax credit is a game changer, potentially cutting child poverty by almost half over the next year. But the CTC improvements, along with much-needed changes to the Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC, for low-wage earners, will expire after a year. We cannot lift millions of American workers and children out of poverty only to force them back into poverty a year later. Congress must make these provisions permanent. We cannot let workers and families down. I urge our members of Congress to make the 2021 CTC and EITC changes permanent in recovery legislation this year and pay for it by making the rich and corporations pay their fair share. Marcelina Ceniceros of Iowa City. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Sunday, July 25th, 2021. I'm your reader, Sharon Falduto, on the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. And we turn to the obituaries. From Strawberry Point, Jack Jr. Fridley, 85, died Friday, July 23rd, and Leonard Muller Funeral Home and Crematory of Strawberry Point is handling arrangements. Eleanor Day of Cedar Rapids passed away on December 10, 2020. Her obituary was published in the Gazette on December 20th. Please join the family and friends of Eleanor to share fond memories and good humor in honor of a woman who touched our lives and lives on in our hearts. The celebration will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 13th at Zeppelin's, 5300 Edgewood Road Northeast, Cedar Rapids. Mom was warm and welcoming and always a gracious host. We'd like to do the same. Doris L. Flynn, 96, of Cedar Rapids, passed away April 7, 2020, at Heritage Specialty Care Center in Cedar Rapids. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, July 31st, at Sharon United Methodist Church. A celebration of life will follow the visitation and will begin at 11 a.m. Sharon United Methodist Church is located at 1809 9th Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids. Steve Reck of Marion, Iowa, passed away on July 18, 2021, at home. A private burial for family and relatives will be at Fremont Township Cemetery in Winthrop, Iowa, at 9 a.m. on Monday, July 26. Friends are welcome to attend his memorial service at Lutheran Church of the Resurrection at 3529th Avenue in Marion at 11 a.m. on July 26. Steve taught industrial arts and coached in the Albernette School District for 17 years before starting a new career at Schimberg Company in Cedar Rapids until retiring in April 2016. Steve enjoyed fishing, was a skilled worker and woodworker, and an avid reader. Dolores Sushamel, 93, formerly of Mount Vernon and Cedar Rapids, died on May 2, 2020. Friends and family are invited to a celebration of life from 2 to 4 p.m. with a tribute to Dolores at 2:30 on Saturday, July 31st at Mount Vernon Creates, 121 1st Street Northwest in Mount Vernon. Edna Dory Minor Larson of Cedar Rapids, who was born in 1928, has passed away. As an adult, Edna worked as a volunteer for Dennis and Donna Aldorf Hospice House of Mercy for several years. She also volunteered through the Kirkwood Community College as an instructor of reading and writing. The teaching of the illiterate is a most rewarding experience of time. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. Services for Edna will be held Wednesday, July 28th at Calvin Sinclair Presbyterian Church at 1:30 p.m. Janet Ann Portman, born Janet Ann Geyer, age 79, of Cedar Rapids, went to be with her Lord on Thursday, July 22nd, after a brief stay at Lynn Manor Care Center in Marion. Family will greet friends and family from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 27th, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 28th, at the funeral home, conducted by William Lavery. Burial will follow at Oakshade Cemetery in Marion. Janet had many talents, including toll painting, many Bible texts, sewing mini quilts, needlepoint, and cross-stitch. Many of the wonderful items she made were sold at the side door and the buttery. Janet also enjoyed gardening and grew many beautiful flowers in her flower beds. Martin Eugene Clancy, age 70, died peacefully Sunday, July 18th, surrounded by and supported by his adoring family. Aside from writing, arranging, and conducting and performing music, one of Marty's most favorite pastimes was riding his bicycle, which he did any chance he had, and even participated in Ragbri on two occasions, with his kids joining him one year. The family also enjoyed traveling, with Ireland being one of Marty's favorite destinations. A memorial service will be held later, tentatively in late August. In lieu of flowers, please help his family honor his legacy by donating to the Cedar Rapids Community Orchestra. Elaine K. Siverson, known as Sarge of Elkader, age 97, died Monday, May 4, 2020, at Mercy One Medical Center in Elkader. A committal service with military honors will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 30th, at Eastside Cemetery, South High Street in Elkader. A celebration of life and reception will follow at Johnson's Restaurant, 916 North High Street, Elkader. Leroy Max Schmidt, known as Smitty, age 92, of Manchester, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, June 26, 2021, at the Good Neighbor Home in Manchester. Memorial services with military honors, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, July 31st, at First Lutheran Church in Manchester, with the Reverend Tony Eade officiating. Visitation, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, July 31st, at First Lutheran Church in Manchester. Interment at a later date in Sedona, Arizona. Marvin L. Carney, age 84, of Marengo, passed away on Thursday, July 22nd, at Compass Memorial Hospital. Mass of Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 28th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, Marengo, with Father David Wilkening officiating. Burial will be at the Calvary Cemetery, Marengo, with military honors conducted by the Marengo American Legion Post 76 and the Army Honor Guard. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 27th, at Kloster Funeral Home, Marengo. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Nancy McAtee, born Nancy Albaugh, age 76, of Marion, passed away at the St. Luke's Hemphill Hospice Unit on July 22nd following a lengthy illness. As per her wishes, she was cremated. Arrangements by Iowa Cremation. A celebration of life will be held from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Monday, August 2nd at the Thomas Park Safe Room, 343 Marion Boulevard, Marion. Come share memories of Nancy with the family. She spent her life as a homemaker and a caring mother to her children. Her family was her pride and joy, and she enjoyed her time with each and every one of them, including her 8 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. While raising her family, she spent many years working at Collins Radio and most recently at Connectronics. She also enjoyed working in her flower gardens. She had a special place in her heart for dogs and horses. Janet K. Digman, age 78, died peacefully Saturday, May 9, 2020. Please join us in celebrating the wonderful life of Janet from noon to 3 p.m. Saturday, July 31st, with memory and story sharing starting at 1:30 p.m. at Hopkinton Community Center, 115 Southwest 1st Street Southeast, Hopkinton. For everyone's safety, please wear a mask if you are not vaccinated. Joanne Wilch of Mount Vernon died of complications from COVID-19 last fall. Thanks to many of you who reached out to our family to remember her and to offer condolences. Jo loved Mount Vernon, her home for over 50 years, where she raised her children, fostered friendships, and contributed to the community. Because of the pandemic, we were unable to come together in person to honor her and to recall her vibrant personality, sense of humor, and love of life. Our family would like to welcome all members of the community to a reception on Jo's behalf on Friday, August 6th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Lester Burrish Community Wellness Center, 855 Palisades Road Southwest, in Mount Vernon. Stephen James Oval, 73, of Cedar Rapids, passed away at home on Wednesday, July 21st, following a valiant battle with glioblastoma. Visitation from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 27th, at the Cedar Memorial Chapel Stateroom. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 28th, at the Hotel at Kirkwood Center, 7725 Kirkwood Boulevard, Southwest. A light luncheon will follow the memorial service. Private family interment will be at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Steve raced enduro goat carts for 19 years, was an active single-engine aircraft pilot, a lifelong distance runner, an active cyclist, and an active wilderness backpacker and mountain climber. He climbed some of the world's tallest peaks, including trekking to Mount Everest Base Camp in Nepal and trekking the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu in Peru. He was especially proud to summit all 54 Colorado peaks above 14,000 feet a total of 96 times. Steve, together with his 2 sons, agreed their most challenging and rewarding adventure together was backpacking the 235-mile length of the John Muir Trail in Southern California. Michael Magner, known as Mick, age 66, of Winona, Minnesota, formerly of Cedar Rapids, passed away unexpectedly February 12, 2021. A celebration of Mick's life and catered lunch will be held from 1 to 5 p.m. Saturday, July 31st, at 7000 North Glen Drive in Palo, located in Covington, Iowa. A private graveside service conducted by Deacon Jim Berger will be held at St. John Cemetery in Cedar Rapids prior to his celebration of life. And Pastor Harold Price Martin, age 89, of Waterloo, formerly of LaPorte City, died on Thursday, July 22nd at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home. He served in the U.S. Air Force during the Korean conflict, and he was a pastor for 8 churches in Iowa and Illinois. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, July 26th at Kimball Avenue United Methodist Church. Visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday at LaPorte City Funeral Home and 1 hour before the service at the church. Burial will be held in Westview Cemetery in LaPorte City with military rites conducted by the LaPorte City American Legion USS San Diego Post 207. Turning to the sports page, Iowa football, Hawkeye Whiteout leads the DEI board, Bible Studies, by Leah Van of the Gazette. A trip home is a tantalizing teleportation into your past self, but for Iowa junior wide receiver Tyrone Tracy Jr., it's one of the many opportunities he has to show who he's becoming. Dressed in a suit and bow tie, Tracy leaned into the mic answering a variety of questions at Big Ten Media Days on Friday, from his NIL deals to how he's led the team through its racial reckoning. "You really don't understand how grateful I am to be here," Tracy said. "I know this is a business trip, but I know talking to you guys is a really blessed situation." This past spring, Tracy spoke candidly on how disappointed he was not only in his performance, but also the low number of opportunities he had last season on the field. But he also emphasized his refocused vision, and Iowa head coach Kirk Ferentz took notice. "Tyrone's all about the team, and he's got a really positive energy," Ferentz said. "Historically, if we have guys that are going to help us score touchdowns, we try to get them the ball in an intelligent way. We envisioned him to be and that kind of player, but also that kind of leader, and you can't force it." As a leading veteran wide receiver, primed to be a top target in the offense this year, Tracy traveled to Texas this summer to train with coaches who work with players like Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott on footwork and how to become a better athlete. Back at Iowa, he's practiced other intricate details of his game, like one-hand catches with sophomore wide receiver Desmond Huston and chemistry with junior quarterback Spencer Petras. "Obviously, we don't try one-handed catches on purpose in the game, but you always want to be prepared," Tracy said. The work isn't limited to the field. Tracy is showing fans more of who he is while also instigating change within the Iowa locker room, and those go hand in hand. That began last summer when Iowa football players were given permission to tweet. Tracy's first tweet after a two-year hiatus was his new profile picture, which honored George Floyd and painted former police officer Derek Chauvin as an evil caricature kneeling on his neck. A few days later, Tracy said there was a new wave coming and to give love and get love. He also became one of the leading voices about the racial disparities in the Iowa football program while also providing the national context. "With Twitter, you are allowed to go on there and post certain things that you probably couldn't post 3 years ago," Tracy said. "I can let fans know that I'm not just a football player. I'm an actual person with feelings and a personality." That's important in establishing his brand in the new era where he's able to profit off his name, image, and likeness. Twitter is how he advertised his autograph signing, which took place on July 18th, alongside junior running back Tyler Goodson and junior defensive back Dane Belton at Gray's Restaurant in Iowa City. But the event did not go without internet criticism, where fans argued that $20 was a steep price for an autograph. Tracy said he understood the critique, but also said that NIL is a new opportunity they're merely learning to navigate and hopes the next signings will be better. He also plans to launch a line of apparel with a personalized logo a week before the first game of the season. Tracy's activism isn't just his brand, though. It's something he's still doing within the team. He said that Ferentz established a diversity, equity, and inclusion committee where members of the team can meet to talk not just about racial relations within the team, but also in the world. He's one of three members on football's DEI committee that reports to Ferentz on a regular basis. "Me, Dane Belton, Kayvon Merriweather, and Ivory Kelly Martin talk to Coach Ferentz probably once a month to make sure if there are any changes that need to happen," Tracy said. "I think he tried to make sure that we all feel home and safe. That includes being a resource for prospective athletes to reach out about any concerns. Any questions they have, I give them the 100% truth," Tracy said. "We did have some racial issues, but we definitely have turned that around. When people come visit Iowa, you'll feel like it's a home instead of a house." Tracy hopes that his activism will continue into his professional career, saying that the NAACP is an organization he hopes to benefit in the future. He's also using faith to connect with his teammates. He started a Bible study, which Petras now regularly attends. As locker buddies, Tracy said that he and Petras are together 90% of the time because the more they bond off the field, the better he feels they will be on it. Petras is working on hitting Tracy's routes when he's in stride, so Tracy can extend plays. Tracy takes the same approach with Petras as he does with improving his performance and the culture of his team. "If he doesn't get it, we do it over," Tracy said with a smile. And in Iowa State news, "Realignment, nothing new to ISU. Future of Big 12 very much in limbo," by Ben Visser, correspondent in Ames. Dealing with realignment isn't new for Iowa State. Joining a new conference would be. A decade ago, the Big 12 landscape shifted when Nebraska, Missouri, Colorado, and Texas A&M all split. The divide seemed to stem from Oklahoma and Texas utilizing their blue blood status as a means of taking control of the conference. And for the last decade, that's essentially what happened. Now, Oklahoma and Texas could be foregoing their control to go to the SEC, a move that would make the most powerful conference in college football even stronger. That same move would lead to the dissolution of the Big 12 because there's no replacing Oklahoma or Texas in terms of brand power or marketability. Iowa State first joined the Missouri Valley Intercollegiate Athletic Association in 1908, which was the Cyclones' home until 1927. Iowa State won its only conference championship in the Missouri Valley when it won in back-to-back years in 1911 and 1912. Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Iowa, Washington, St. Louis, and Drake founded the conference, and Kansas State, Iowa State, Grinnell, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma A&M, or Oklahoma State, joined later. In 1928, the conference split apart, and Iowa State, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, and Kansas State made the Big Six, which eventually evolved into the Big Eight and then the Big 12. The Cyclones have been in that same conference since its inception after previously having independent status from 1892 to 1907. When Colorado, Missouri, Nebraska, and Texas A&M broke away and joined new conferences in 2010 and 2011, it put the Big 12 in flux. It was reported then that Iowa State Athletics Director Jamie Pollard was an instrumental figure in keeping the conference together. At the time, salvaging the Big 12 was exactly what Iowa State needed because it wasn't in a great position to land in another top-tier conference. The stadium upgrades hadn't happened yet, and neither had the facility upgrades. Before last week, conference realignment talks weren't expected to pick back up until 2024-25, when the current TV contract expires. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby said during Big 12 Media Days, "A lot of the motivation for realignment is no longer there. Is that to say it couldn't happen? No, it could possibly happen for other reasons than TV money, but it doesn't appear to me that the motivation is there at this point in time. Not to say it couldn't happen, but it's not one of the things that keep me up at night." It might be keeping him up at night now. 10 years ago, the best thing for Iowa State was for the Big 12 to stay together, and that's what Pollard did. Now, Matt Campbell has brought the football program to new heights in a time when football continues to be the driving force. Add in the $90 million facility upgrades and the current upgrades happening to Jack Trice Stadium, and the Cyclones have never been better positioned to land another power conference, which begs the question, what conference could Iowa State land in? Currently, there seems to be two prevailing thoughts for Iowa State to land in another power conference. The first, and probably most popular with Iowa State fans, would be the geographically friendly Big Ten. Pollard has connections to high-ranking Big Ten officials, the first being Barry Alvarez, the new Big Ten football czar. He was Pollard's mentor at Wisconsin, and Pollard maintains a good relationship with him. Ohio State Athletics Director Gene Smith was Iowa State's athletic director from 1993 to 2000, and still talks fondly of his time in Ames. The other option would be the Pac-12 absorbing most of the remaining Big 12 and create a hypothetical Pac-12 East with Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Utah, and Texas Tech. A Pac-12 West in this scenario would be Cal, Oregon, Oregon State, USC, UCLA, Stanford, Washington, and Washington State. Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliakoff went on ESPN Friday to discuss realignment. "I consider the Pac-12 an exclusive club with a high barrier to entry," Kliakoff said. "We love the schools and teams we have today. We're not actively seeking to poach any teams from any conference, but we'd be foolish not to listen if schools call us." A decade ago, the Cyclones would have been in a precarious situation if the Big 12 had folded. Now, if the Big 12 dissolves, Iowa State are at least better positioned to land in another Power 5 conference. Turning to the History Happenings section, written by Joe Coffey, prohibition linked to women getting the vote. But some Iowa women kept drinking and making alcohol in the 20s. Women, liberal and conservative, were a driving force in the nationwide debate over drinking that led to prohibition, America's attempt 100 years ago to ban the consumption of alcohol. The temperance movement was increasingly tied to the suffragette movement as the country found a way to deal with the politics of alcohol and its problematic gendered norms in American society. The 18th Amendment was ratified at the dawn of the Roaring Twenties, essentially banning the manufacture, transportation, and sale of intoxicating liquors. The perceived victory for women, however, was more complicated than it seemed, especially in Cedar Rapids. Prohibition led to women and minorities starting businesses and making money in the underground economy. K. Kitchen burners started cooking mash while basements became distilleries. Husband and wife setups were known as blind pigs. Some blind pigs morphed into moonshine joints and home speaks. Some generated revenue under the counter of legitimate soft drink parlors. That was the case with Mary Dvorak, who, along with her husband John, were nabbed in Cedar Rapids' first big prohibition bust on March 22, 1920, at their soft drink parlor at 1317 South 3rd Street, Southeast. 11 people faced charges in the citywide raids, including Julia and Thomas Harrisamuck. The raids yielded 7 stills, about 100 gallons of white mule kegs of raisin mash, 80 gallons of liquor, several gallons of almost pure alcohol, boxed raisins, hops, apricots, and bitters. Drinking in the home should not and will not be stopped for several generations, Linn County Sheriff H.J. Manchester told a Gazette reporter in 1929. I don't believe the intent of the prohibition law is to deprive these people. That explains why prohibition alcohol-related arrests in Cedar Rapids peaked at 784 in 1922 and at 216 in Linn County in 1924. To some degree, folks were making their own booze at home or getting it the legal way by going to their doctors, pharmacists, and dentists who would prescribe rye whiskey, scotch, and gin for anxiety, depression, and pain. Alcohol was strong, and women didn't want to be associated with being good at drinking it, so they used new cocktail recipes from women's magazines to find the drinks that would become part of their routines and identities. They learned to make martinis, Manhattans, gin rickeys, and old fashions. They also learned the etiquette of hosting a new kind of party called a cocktail party. With a new penchant for alcohol, an evolving taste for different drinks, and acceptance into speakeasies, women had entered a social zone once reserved for men. Newspapers and magazines that didn't toe the prohibition line were viewed as immoral by teetotalers. There is no doubt that there has been a conspiracy on the part of the wet press to nullify prohibition, the Reverend W. L. Ewing of St. Paul's M.E. Church told the Gazette in 1929. Despite growing acceptance of alcohol throughout the 1920s, alcohol-related arrests continued during the 13 years of prohibition. Maggie and Matt Pashakornis dove for the cellar when cops raided their home at 1335 D Avenue in Cedar Rapids in 1922. They were caught with a copper boiler and 25 gallons of mash and apple alcohol. It was their second offense. Anna Easker was busted at her home, 1410 3rd Street South in Cedar Rapids, in October 1924. Police found 400 gallons of wine, 30 bottles of beer, and a small bottle of alcohol. Customer Alfred Thomas ratted out Easker after selling a pint of her hooch to a federal agent. The 21st Amendment and ending prohibition was ratified December 5, 1933, essentially legitimizing women drinking in public, an outcome that wasn't discussed when the temperance movement started. Adhering to an absolutist agenda was an interesting way to get there, especially since so many prohibition supporters, men and women, were more than okay with the occasional social drink or two. And as a piece of history, thousands flocked to 1927 Cedar Rapids Market. The Cedar Rapids City Produce Market broke its attendance record on July 23, 1927, when 2,000 people showed up to shop. A concrete promenade had been added to the market at B Avenue and 1st Street Northwest, allowing 63 vendors to set up around the perimeter. The new promenade gave shoppers easy access to the stalls and also shortened the distance they had to walk to their cars. Potatoes, beets, carrots, cabbage, berries, and live hens were reported to be of good quality and in great supply, as well as lots of flowers. Philip Prey, the market supervisor, suggested the market would grow to as many 80 stalls by the end of the season. Covered stalls were discussed, but weren't added that year. And some things to do this week. The Johnson County Fair. There will be 4-H and FFA livestock and educational entries, games, talent contest, carnival, and entertainment, including Impact Pro Wrestling on Monday and a family rodeo on Wednesday. That's today, to Wednesday, at the fairgrounds, 4261 Oak Crest Hill Road, southeast in Iowa City, and that is free. The Cirque Italia Water Circus. The story begins with our ringmaster, clown Rafina, fishing when he unexpectedly catches a bottle with a treasure map stuffed inside. His ensuing journey takes the audience through storms on the high seas, dreams of angelic aerialists, pirate fights, and more. That's 7:30 p.m. Thursday and Friday, 1:30, 4:30, and 7:30 p.m. Saturday, and 1:30 and 4:30 p.m. on August 1st at the Coral Ridge Mall, 1451 Coral Ridge Avenue in Coralville, and the cost is $10 to $40. Music in the Courtyard, Once Upon a Time, an evening of storytelling in song by a trio of gifted vocalists and songwriters, Alex Schulte, Aureli Berta, and Scott DL at 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday at Bruce Moore, 2160 Linden Drive Southeast in Cedar Rapids. The cost is $25 to $100. Swisher Fun Days. The fun kicks off Friday with a 6th annual human foosball tournament and bingo, princess characters, kitty tractor pull, live music, and more. On Saturday, the parade is at 10 a.m., petting zoo, kids zone, and live entertainment and fireworks. That's 5 p.m. to midnight Friday, 7:30 a.m. to midnight Saturday, and that's downtown 2nd Street Southeast in Swisher. The admission is free. Rock the Block. Soul Sherpa will perform 6 to 8 p.m. Friday at the Nubo City Market at 1100 3rd Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids, and that is free. And the Pork Tornadoes. The Iowa band plays pop, rock, and even country. This performance by the band was originally scheduled for June 19th and then September 25th. Tickets for all dates will be accepted. That is 7 p.m. Saturday at the McGrath Amphitheater, 475 1st Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids, and the cost is $14 to $50. And finally, the top weather story this week, going above average for 90s. Hot weather is here to stay for a little while at least, with highs expected to stay at or above 90 degrees until later this week. This adds to our running total of days meeting that threshold with an above normal year in terms of number of 90s in near certainty. So far this year, we've seen at least 9 days of a high of at least 90. Saturday's high was not officially available at press time, but I was there yesterday and it was definitely above 90. All of them occurred in June, which was the most for that month since 1995. On average, over the last 30 years, Cedar Rapids sees 11 days at or above 90. With multiple 90s in the forecast this week, we'll likely blow right past that mark in the near future. That's for meteorologist Corey Thompson of KCRG. And that brings us to the end of the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Sunday, July 25th, 2021. Remember, you can access a recording of this or any other IRIS materials at our website anytime, www.iowaradioreading.org. I've been your reader, Sharon Falduto. Thanks for listening.